from deep inside your radio.
Well, you know, if you're not in Southern California today, you have the worst weather in America. That's all there is to say about that. I am back at the Le Show Dome just for a pit stop, just long enough to catch this from a newspaper in London, where I'll be next week, from The Telegraph, as a matter of fact. Some people's brains are predisposed to becoming dependent on mind-altering substances, a study has found. Well, y'all, as well as helping scientists understand and treat addiction, the findings could lead to a simple blood test to identify whether a child has a propensity to become hooked. Well, that would be interesting for dealers to be able to target their prospects in an early. Researchers agree that drug addiction and excessive sensation-seeking or impulsiveness are linked, but it has been unclear which comes first. Scientists at the University of Cambridge in England report some individuals are indeed predisposed to drug addiction by the way their brains are wired. This is your drug on brains. They seem to lack the docking points for dopamine, a signaling molecule that plays a major part in what neuroscientists call the reward pathway to cause the craving experienced by many smokers and addicts. The findings published in Science may lead to more targeted treatments for addiction and other compulsive behavior disorders with fewer side effects. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. It ain't you. It's your brain. But the war continues, of course, because never let science interfere with a good war. Hello, welcome to the show.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California, well, to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulfstream waters. I tell ya, this land was made for you.
From the edge of this land, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, first time in a while, tales of airport security, won't you? I guess because it's been getting so much better, we haven't had many of these to report. Of course, not since mine. From last summer at Heathrow Airport. And coincidentally, this one from Heathrow Airport. Marta writes, and not the one you're thinking of. Dear Harry, today I was at Heathrow transferring from British Airways flight arriving from Cairo to British Airways flight to Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C. At the transfer point, I requested that 50 rolls of color negative film I carried with me be hand inspected and not run through an X-ray machine. I've done this literally dozens of times since I do a lot of underwater photography and have yet to make the switch to digital. I've never had a problem before. Sound like a setup? You bet. Now the security technician refused. I asked to speak to a supervisor. When the supervisor arrived, I made my request to her, but she also refused, stating that the X-ray would be perfectly safe. At this point, I informed her that I would be traveling through multiple airports and that the cumulative effect of the X-rays would ultimately damage my film. Again, she refused to grant my request. I asked to speak to her supervisor so I could explain the situation. She refused my request, but did say she would talk to her supervisor for me. After about 5 minutes, she returned and told me the decision was final. The film had to go through X-ray. Again, I requested to speak to her supervisor myself. Again, the woman refused, stating, quote, "I won't bother her for the likes of you," unquote. At this point, I asked the woman for her name so that I could file a formal complaint. She just smiled at me and told me that, by law, she didn't have to give me her name. At this point, one of the other security personnel chimed in that if I continued to insist on having the film hand-inspected, they might possibly just rip all the unprocessed film out of the canisters to see what was inside. In the end, the film was put through the X-ray machine, and I was allowed through security. The best part, not 2 weeks earlier on my way to Cairo, I had my unexposed film hand-inspected by security at Heathrow. No problem at all. Person obviously confused by the notion that there should be such a thing as a policy. Hope we clear that up for her. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Brian Williams is in Baghdad, so I don't think he'll be borrowing this one. And now, turning to the wonderful world of Inspectors General. Oh, by the way, last week on this broadcast, I blurted out that the Lamb to the Slaughter story by Roald Dahl had been on a Twilight Zone episode, and a barrage, a torrent, a veritable tsunami of email came from listeners saying, no, that was an Alfred Hitchcock episode, not a Twilight Zone episode. They were, of course, correct, and it proves that my listeners are very smart and very old. Dateline Washington, President Bush has nominated a new Inspector General for the Defense Department. This is good news. Defense Department, of course, needs an Inspector General. The post has been vacant for 16 months. I wonder why. The man nominated, Claude Kicklighter. That's correct, ladies and gentlemen. Claude Kicklighter. You think the names in movies are funny? Claude Kicklighter. He'll be replacing the Deputy Inspector General, who has been acting in that capacity since September of 2005. The previous nominee, David Loffman, was stalled amid complaints from Democrats that his name wasn't funny. No, that he would not prove sufficiently independent. Kicklighter has been working on Iraq for the State Department and the Pentagon. What, and he doesn't have a Medal of Freedom yet? It's his problem. He currently runs the Joint State and Pentagon Afghanistan Transition Planning Group, and there's good work. But he may face tough questions, too. He ran the Pentagon's Iraqi transition operations and Pentagon's liaison with the what they're now in this press note from UPI is calling the ill-fated Coalition Provisional Authority. It was fate, see? It wasn't dumb. It wasn't refusal to have a plan B. According to a Washington Times report, in January of 2004, one of Kicklighter's jobs there in Iraq with the coalition, with the ill-fated Coalition Provisional Authority, one of his first jobs there was, quote, aiding in the award of reconstruction contracts, unquote. And they've gone so well. The White House withdrew his nomination a couple years ago to be a member of the Defense Base Closure Commission. So he'll be the Inspector General of the Pentagon investigating some of those reconstruction contracts? Really? Hope so. That'll be fun. That'll be good fun for everybody. Representative John Dingell, this is news of the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Representative John Dingell of Michigan says the nation's switch to digital TV may have to wait again. But it's so good. I'm looking at it right now. I don't have to have cataracts. The clarity of the digital, of course, unless it's most digital channels, in which case. As you know, February, 2 years from now, Americans will either need a digital TV or a digital-to-analog converter box to continue to watch television. Dingell and many others have questioned whether there's enough time to educate Americans on the change. See, I'm going to say this again. I don't think we needed to be educated about the difference between color and black and white. It was right there. And we have to fix a date that, first of all, makes sense, says Dingell. His committee is investigating whether there should be a new deadline and whether the federal government is doing enough to prepare for the switch. The DTV Transition Coalition, trade groups representing cable, broadcast, and consumer electronic companies, announced this week it's launching an education campaign to increase awareness of the 2009 transition. Yes, your TV will be going black. Maybe you'd like to know about it. Dingell expressed concern that a $1.5 million federal subsidy program that Congress created to help consumers purchase those boxes may be insufficient to meet the need. He added, if people lose their TV signals on February 17, 2009, there will be enormous ramifications. Says Dingell, if the converter box program doesn't proceed smoothly, a day of reckoning will come. A scapegoat will be found. People will be voted off the island. Unquote. So I guess he watches. Because it's so complicated, don't you know? By the way, the one of the interesting parts of the transition is that there are not yet technical standards for those converter boxes. And it's only 2 years away. So, never too early to panic, ladies and gentlemen. How's the Iraq thing going? Well, General Odierno, which to me sounds like a deodorant pad brand, but that's just me. Or is it just me? General Odierno. Sorry. It is just me. He's on CNN today saying, we'll know how this thing is going, this surge, at a minimum of 6 to 9 months. We'll start to know. But an elite team of officers advising the U.S. commander, General Petraeus, has concluded his forces have a maximum of 6 months to win the war or face a Vietnam-style collapse in support. So it's either a minimum or a maximum. Kind of magical, don't you think? The loss of political and public support could force the military into a hasty retreat. You know what? That's what I'm betting on. I'm betting on dumb in, dumb out. Call me a cynic. The officers are charged with implementing the strategy announced by President Bush. The team, known as the Baghdad Brains Trust. This is your country on brains. Ensconced in the Green Zone, is struggling to overcome a range of entrenched problems, according to a former U.S. administration official familiar with their deliberations. This is from, let's put the name of the paper at the top. Yes, this is from The Guardian in England, which is a liberal paper. Quote, they know they are operating under a clock. Ooh, better hope there's not an earthquake. They know they're going to hear a lot more talk in Washington about Plan B by the autumn, meaning withdrawal. They know the next six-month period is their opportunity, and they say it's getting harder every day. Unquote. The next 6 months are make or break for the U.S. military and the Iraqi government. The main obstacles confronting General Petraeus' team are insufficient troops on the ground, a disintegrating international coalition by Brits, by Italians, an anticipated increase in violence in the south as the British leave, morale problems as casualties rise, and a failure of political will in Washington and or Baghdad. The scene is very tense, says the former official. They're working around the clock. So they're working around the clock and under the clock. Can we have some more? Can I buy another preposition, please? Endless cups of tea with the Iraqis, the official continues. But they're still trying to figure out what's the plan. Join the club, babe. The president is expecting progress, but they're thinking, what does he mean? The plan is changing every minute, as all plans do. Really? All plans change every minute. I guess he means in war. Because I planned to be here at the top of the hour and to leave at the top of the next hour, and I'm going to tell you, that's what's going to happen. The biggest concern of the general's team, perhaps, is that the political will in Washington may collapse just as the military is on the point of making a counterinsurgency breakthrough. Stephen Simon of the NSC during the Clinton administration said a meltdown in political and public backing was likely if the new strategy was not seen as working quickly. Yes, You might want to keep that in mind the next time you get into one of these things. That's what we're like. Meantime, although the finger from Washington keeps pointing at Iran about weapons coming across the border to kill Americans, to kill American kids, as the current talking point has it, McClatchy newspapers report that Sunni Muslim insurgents, not Shiites, whom the Iranians support, Sunnis, who hate the Iranians, well, who doesn't? Sunnis remain by far the biggest threat to American troops in Iraq. This is according to a review of American casualty reports. U.S. officials have held briefings to publicize their concerns about those potent bombs known as EFPs. Casualty reports suggest such weapons in the hands of Shiites are responsible for a relatively small number of American deaths. Attacks with such weapons increased 150% in the last year, say U.S. officials. But casualty reports show the deadliest roadside bomb attacks of the war have occurred in predominantly Sunni areas or mixed areas. One quarter, from December 2005 through January of this year, occurred in western Iraq, which is predominantly Sunni. Nearly two-thirds took place in Baghdad and other ethnically and religiously mixed areas. Fewer than 10% were in predominantly Shiite, can I say that on the radio yet, areas. Fewer than half the bomb attacks on heavily armored U.S. vehicles were in areas where Shiite militias predominate. Analysts say the casualty numbers show that U.S. officials are exaggerating the importance of EFPs, which military officials say have been used only by Shiites. Now, why would they want to do that? That's me thinking. Former Ambassador Barbara Bodine is hardly the first to itemize the many U.S. policy failures in the Iraq War, but she may be one of the most qualified such critics, according to The Independent, a liberal newspaper in London. She was in charge of reconstruction efforts the month after the invasion. She's a graduate of UCSB, where I'll be this afternoon, speaking at 4 o'clock at Campbell Hall. Y'all come. Bodine acknowledged her serious misgivings about the invasion before it was launched, but said she was, quote, absolutely astonished by the Bush administration's lack of any post-invasion planning. Really? You didn't know who you were working with, babe? Dick Armitage, then Deputy Secretary of State, just before the start of hostilities, asked her to run the reconstruction effort. She was to be responsible for Baghdad and the Sunni Triangle. When she went to Washington, she discovered the problem was worse than she supposed. Quote, we had a great idea of how to invade, but we had no idea of what we were going to do with it afterward. We didn't have any plan. I had no staff, no mission. It was basically, it's yours, go figure out what to do, starting 2 or 3 weeks before the invasion. She discovered the problem was far more insidious than not having a plan. A detailed blueprint, in fact, had been developed for what to do with Iraq in the event of an invasion. The plan had been 18 months in the making and involved 250 Iraqis, academics, and experts with the State Department, the CIA, and the National Security Council. However, that plan, as listeners to this program may recall, was generated by the State Department, and the Pentagon was put in charge of the post-war effort, and the Pentagon didn't want to look at no plan made by the State Department. Because it's the grown-ups. Don't you know? Now, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Republican presidential hopeful Senator John McCain has apologized for remarks that some critics interpreted as undervaluing the service of U.S. troops in Iraq. While announcing his plan to run for the presidency on the Letterman show, McCain said about the Iraq War, quote, Americans are very frustrated and they have every right to be. We wasted a lot of our most precious treasure, which is American lives, over there, unquote. The words provoked a quick backlash from Democrats who demanded an apology. Quote, last evening I referred to American casualty in Iraq as wasted, McCain said Thursday. I should have used the word sacrificed, as I have in the past. As I've said many times, I believe we've made many mistakes in the prosecution of the war. That does not change the fact, however, we've made many mistakes in the past. We've paid a grievous price for those mistakes in the lives of the men and women, blah, 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 blah. That's the second presidential candidate to make that mistake and apologize for it. Barack Obama, of course, used the word wasted with regard to American casualties earlier in this campaign cycle. Of course, in Vietnam, it had a whole other meaning. The chief executive officer of a company that runs nursing homes in Missouri has been sentenced to 18 months in prison on federal fraud charges connected to unhealthy conditions at the facilities. No, it's not the VA. It's the private sector. Robert Wachter of Jackson, Wyoming, was also fined a total of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Wachter apologized in court, saying, quote, "Mistakes were made," unquote. Always good to use the passive voice, babe. Joyce Thiel and her sister, Gloria Stringer, said they picked ants off their mother at one of the homes. They said Wachter didn't get enough prison time, but he did use the passive voice, and they admired him for it. No, they did. Dateline New York, The View moderator Rosie O'Donnell has apologized for shutting down co-host Elizabeth Hasselbeck earlier this week. Rosie, as she's called in this news dispatch from Access Hollywood, exchanged heated words with the former Survivor contestant on the air over whether the government had a right to listen in on citizens' phone calls. Conservative Hasselbeck said she supported the government eavesdropping. Rosie said, "Elizabeth, you are very young and you are very wrong." On her website, Rosie blogged, quote, "I said some of Elizabeth's comments were ignorant, which was ignorant itself. I feel badly," said Rosie, "for hurting her feelings. She has forgiven me." Which reminds me, I know it's trashy, but I do enjoy the public spat between Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump, because it's one of the few occasions in American public life where both sides of the dispute are telling the truth. Dateline Boston, Boston Celtics radio commentator and former player Cedric Cornbread Maxwell is apologizing for comments directed at a female referee during a game broadcast. Maxwell criticized ref Violet Palmer and said she should, quote, "go back to the kitchen," then added, "go in there and make me some bacon and eggs, would you?" The program and operations VP issued a statement calling Maxwell's comments a poor attempt at humor. "We don't condone what he said." Maxwell will apologize on air during the next Celtics broadcast. He will not face disciplinary action beyond the apology. Same station previously fired a host for calling a politician a fat lesbian. Maybe it's something in the drinking water at that station. The major owner of Pizza Hut, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Taco Bell franchises saw a majority of its New York City restaurants shut down this week as fallout continued from a video showing rats in its eateries. New closures prompted swift action by fast food giant Yum Brands. They're changing their name to Yik. They announced the preemptive closing of 10 additional New York restaurants operated by the ADF companies of Fairfield, New Jersey. ADF President Don Harty apologized to customers for the problems. Quote, "We're embarrassed by the situation and stressed that certain restaurants did not meet the very high standards we set for ourselves," he said in a statement. "We require the rats in our restaurants to be dead." The editor of a weekly newspaper, Dateline San Francisco, the editor of a weekly newspaper calling itself the voice of Asian America, on Wednesday apologized to community leaders and suspended a columnist who wrote a piece entitled, quote, "Why I Hate Blacks," unquote. "At Asian Week, we take full responsibility for the mistake we made, apologize for the publication of the piece, and assure it will not happen again," said Ted Fang, Asian Week's editor-at-large. "Promotion of hate speech of any kind cannot and will not be tolerated." He also said the writer, Kenneth Eng, 22, he's very young, he's almost as young as Elizabeth Hasselbeck, will be suspended. In the piece, Eng explained why he supports discrimination against blacks, saying, "They are the only race that has been enslaved for 300 years. He describes himself as an Asian supremacist. He's also written a piece called Why I Hate Asians. He's on a jag. He's on a hate jag. The Republic of Srpska, that's Serbian Bosnia, has apologized to Bosnia for war crimes committed. The Bosnian Serb spokesman said told radio station B92, legendary independent radio station in Bosnia, the apology was delivered by Prime Minister Milorad Dodik on behalf of the government. Dodik publicly apologized on Monday. Bosnia's future necessitates that the victims of the last war, regardless of their ethnicity, receive the deepest apologies. The government of the Republic of Srpska is doing precisely that and calls on the representatives of other Bosnian nations to do the same in order to secure a better future for the citizens of the country. And finally, California's Workplace Safety Office has rescinded a report on a whale attack at SeaWorld, acknowledging it doesn't know enough about whales. The Workplace Safety Office apologized for suggesting in the report that it's only a matter of time before a SeaWorld trainer gets killed. The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
You say potato, I say potato. You say potato, and I say potato, potato. You say either, and I say...
I'm fired, and there's Harry falling.
No, I'm fine. I'm really fine. Thank you, though. I appreciate the concern. This is Le Show. And this week, because the vice president paid a secret visit there, there was a flurry of news and not-so-news, if you've been listening to this broadcast, where we kind of keep an eye on our good friend Pakistan, news about Pakistan. The U.S. has praised India's good record on counter-narcotics activity, but is worried that an alarming increase in poppy cultivation in Afghanistan is helping Taliban terrorists fund attacks on U.S. and NATO forces. India, says a U.S. official, is the only legal producer of opium. Did you know that? I didn't know that. But there's stuff about Pakistan coming up, because it turns out it's not only Afghanistan where poppy cultivation is ballooning. The illicit cultivation of opium poppy in Pakistan is on the increase. Hasn't reached the level of the early 1990s, but the International Narcotics Control Board notes the government is making efforts to eradicate the poppy cultivation. But the new trend is the smuggling of heroin from Pakistan to China. All right, you go, girl. Seizures of opium in Pakistan have remained at a relatively low level compared with neighboring countries. From the Glasgow Sunday Herald, this, not just because the guy who's being quoted has a funny name. Quote, despite the stationing of around 80,000 troops in the tribal areas along the border, Pakistan has neither been able to prevent the Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters crossing the porous borders into Afghanistan, nor to prevent the radicalization of its own tribal belt. The Taliban have found a particularly hospitable environment in Waziristan and the bordering areas of neighboring Baluchistan, home of Jim Baluchi. This from a scholar at the Department of Defense Studies at King's College London by the name of, I swear I'm reading this, Harsh V. Pant. Harsh Pant, ladies and gentlemen. Harsh Pant. He's not the only one. Testifying before the Senate, the new director of national intelligence, retired Admiral Mike McConnell, said any new attack on the United States is most likely to emerge from Pakistan, which hosts the Al-Qaeda leadership and other international terrorists, and which serves as the breeding ground for broader Islamic radicalism. This is our ally. This is our friend. Many of our most important interests intersect in Pakistan, where the Taliban and Al-Qaeda maintain critical sanctuaries, McConnell said. The country is our partner in the war on terror. However, it is also a major source of Islamic extremism. Unquote. Why, that's downright paradoxical. The director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Michael Maples, agreed. He said the Afghanistan-Pakistan border area remains a haven for Al-Qaeda's leadership and other extremists. Despite that September agreement between Pakistan and North Waziristan tribes to curtail attacks into Afghanistan, the tribes have not abided by most terms of the agreement, leading to increased freedom of movement and operation for Al-Qaeda's network. Pakistan's internal inaction against terrorists and other militants, both intelligence officials agree, also threatens stability in Afghanistan and India. Pakistan-based militants continue attacks against India, and that undermines Pakistan's ability to make lasting peace with its neighbor, according to the head of the DIA. Why, that's a country that has nuclear weapons, harbors terrorists, and threatens its neighbors. Wasn't that the magic? We recognize that aggressive military action, however, has been costly for Pakistani security forces and appreciate concerns over the potential for sparking tribal rebellion and a backlash by sympathetic Islamic political parties, said the intelligence officials. From the International Herald Tribune, barbers are scared to shave customers' chins. Alleged thieves with blackened faces are paraded through the streets in shame. Suspected spies for the U.S. are found beheaded in a ditch. These are tales of Taliban-style justice in Pakistani border regions, and they're proliferating. That from the International Herald Tribune, as I say. Pakistan rejects claims by the intelligence chiefs that Osama bin Laden, hey, he's turning 50? Is that right? The big 5-0 for Osama? Are in border region. Pakistani General Musharraf acknowledged that foreign militants were in the tribal regions along the Afghan border and warned them to leave. As for McConnell, Mike McConnell, the intelligence chief, accusation of those border areas being a haven, that has been dealt with by the interior minister, who says to the Associated Press, quote, "We deny it," unquote. So there you are. That you can take to the rupee bank. Pakistan also denied this week something else, denied that the U.S. military coalition forces have the authority to pursue Taliban forces fleeing from Afghanistan into Pakistan. Quote, "There is no authorization of hot pursuit of terrorists into our territory," says Major General Waheed Arshad. That's a good partner. No, you can't come in. We'll take care of it. The visit of the vice president to Pakistan was followed by the capture of the former Taliban defense minister. Security officials now say the country is braced for possible reprisals by extremist forces. So what happened during Dick Cheney's visit to Islamabad? Now you know, of course, that a day later in Afghanistan, an explosion occurred near where Cheney was. He was forced to take even more cover, and Al-Qaeda took credit for the attack, saying he was the target. But what happened when he was meeting with General Musharraf, General Pervez Musharraf? He says it is not correct that he went in to beat up on General Musharraf. "That's not the way I work," Cheney said, talking on background but using the first person. "The idea that I go in and threaten someone is an invalid misreading of the way I do business." I think to find out more about that, you do have to go underground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
This week brought the first sign of a thaw since mid-November. I'm not talking about the bird song loops the Navy Seabees began playing this week at the Secure and Disclosed, just to give Lynn the sense of impending spring. I'm referring to the thaw in my constituent in chief's relationship with me, as it becomes clear that our Democrat friends have no more idea of how to end a war than about how to fight one. Little sign of how the wind blows. Our friend Senator McCain now sees it as politically desirable not to deny my assertion that he apologized for blaming me for the so-called mistakes in our enormously successful war policy. Of course, if he had actually apologized, it might have been harder to deny my assertion. But the point is, our long political winter is coming to an end, which just makes it that much easier for Operation Get Iran Next to continue its steady progress. Me personally, I was doing what I like best, getting my hands dirty this week on another account in our portfolio. Little piece of business by the name of Pakistan. Our friends at the CIA were back playing the leaking game, letting slip little pieces of supposed intel about the Taliban regrouping in our fine allies' northwestern corner. Personally, I thought that tip was less believable than Nancy Pelosi's eye job. But I was off on a secure, undisclosed flight to a capital city whose first five letters spell Islam to convince a certain ally that acting like an actual ally was the best hope of perpetuating the pleasant little fiction called Our Alliance. Monday, 10:17 a.m.
You don't seem to be touching your tea, Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, never really much of a tea sipper, Mr. President. My people fought a revolution in part so we could get our caffeine from something ground, not something bagged.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. My people fought so that we could pray to Muhammad instead of something that looks like an elephant.
Mm-hmm. Probably a good idea, Mr. President.
Let's drop the formalities, shall we?
Huh.
You can call me General.
Now, let's drop the generalities, too, if you don't mind.
Oh, fine with me. Look, as we say in my country, I didn't just fall off the dote wagon.
Mm-hmm.
I know why you're here. I knew you were coming. I know when you're leaving. You may be secure and undisclosed to your people, but not to me and my people.
Well, then, why don't we go down this road a little further, General? Tell me what my message is to you today.
All right. You don't think we've done enough to help you in your war on the terrorists you don't like? Mm-hmm. And you want us to stop the growing of opium puppies on our soil and, oh, by the way, being able to question General Khan about selling nuclear secrets to half the known world might be down there on your agenda as well.
You've got good intel, my friend.
In this neighborhood, you'd have to. We don't need intelligence to justify our policies or take their rap when they fail. We need intel to stay on the breathing side of life.
Mm. General, let's be grown-ups. What do you say? There's intel we make public. There's intel that's actually worth something. Let me tell you what I know. You're going to tell me about your internal political situation, how appearing to help us any more than you are would inflame your Islamist population and might result in your being replaced by something truly frightening, a democratically elected president.
Well, I'd say that was what your Mr. Tenet used to call a slam dunk.
Well, sir, let me slam you into something a little bit less comfortable.
My arm!
I like this hold. It's one a guy with four heart attacks can use to disable a strong military type of person. CB's taught it to me while they were regrouting the secure and disclosed bathroom tile.
You don't think brute physical violence is going to accomplish anything, do you?
It'll get your attention. Now, if you think anyone has a worse internal political situation than my constituent in chief, raise your hand. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, let's get serious here. We're selling the top-of-the-line F-18s to your friends in New Delhi. Stealth capability, hypersonic velocity package, high-speed internet, all the tools. Love to sell them to you. No, you'd love to have them. But we do need a better reason to make the deal than just the fact that it's, you know, a nice piece of business for some of our good friends in the military aircraft community.
Mr. Vice President, you lose me. You lose Pakistan.
Yeah.
You lose Pakistan. There's nothing in the neighborhood of Iran and Afghanistan except 100 million Muslim curry eaters. You think they care about your perpetual war on their friends and relatives? They care about Pakistan getting into the World Cup finals, period. You don't send me those planes, India will be eating our lunch before breakfast tomorrow. You want me to arrest some Al-Qaeda number threes? No problem. We've got hundreds of them. You want me to commit political suicide? Not in this incarnation.
Yeah, well, we might have to do the standard economy package on the aircraft rather than the upgrade. Did I happen to mention that our friends in New Delhi got the upgrade?
Mr. Cheney, I'm sure you're regarded as a very tough man in your own neighborhood.
Well,
as it happened, this isn't your own neighborhood.
Yeah.
You'll get your Al-Qaeda number three. We'll get our planes. And now you'll do me and my people the honor of leaving before our police happen to discover opium poppies and your secure, undisclosed baggage.
Well, I do have to go, as the peculiarities of my schedule would have it, but, my friend, I would leave you with one little, let's say it's a health tip.
Mm-hmm.
You never know when my government might decide it would like to promote democracy right here. And those activists you throw in prison might start getting some much-needed assistance.
I have no real problem with that, Dick. As long as they don't get the planes.
You have to hand it to Purves. He's my kind of guy. The next day, when I made a secure and disclosed stop at Bagram in Afghanistan, somebody organized an explosive little welcome for me. Violence does get your attention after all. End of partial diary for the end of February 2007. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Ladies and gentlemen, wacky intel one more time. Remember the explosive U.S. accusations in 2002 about a secret North Korean uranium enrichment program? That's what led to the political standoff with North Korea over its nuclear weapons program. A U.S. intelligence official said Tuesday, quoted by Agence France-Presse, "The United States is now less certain about the existence of the program." Quote, "We still have confidence that the program is in existence at the mid-confidence level," unquote. Joseph Detrani of the National Intelligence Director's Office testifying to the Armed Services Committee of the Senate. Under intelligence definitions of the U.S., that means the information is interpreted in various ways, we have alternative views, or it is not fully corroborated. The mid-confidence level, ladies and gentlemen, which explains the game we've been enjoying all this time. Yes, I mean, it's a mid-confidence game. Now,
Harry, I had no idea you were there.
I'm here every week. I really am. But now, time for News of the Warm. I have mid-confidence this will happen.
Soft, listen to the warm.
The Reverend Jerry Falwell says global warming is Satan's attempt to redirect the church's primary focus from evangelism to environmentalism. He said some naive Christian leaders are being duped by arguments like those presented in Al Gore's documentary. Falwell says the documentary should have been entitled A Convenient Untruth. Falwell said the Bible teaches God will maintain the earth until Jesus returns. So Christians should be responsible environmentalists, but not what he calls, quote, first-class nuts. They should travel economy. I agree with you, sir. Dateline Germany. Global climate change is happening faster than previously believed, and its impact is worse than expected. This is information from an as-yet-unpublished draft of the second part of the United Nations report obtained by Der Spiegel newspaper. In Germany, no region of the planet will be spared and some will be hit especially hard. Human influences over the last 30 years, quote, have had a recognizable effect on many physical and biological systems, write the authors of the as-yet-unreleased second part of the Global Climate Change Report. The panel is already convinced the global warming is making the world sweat. Glacial lakes are increasing in both size and number, potentially leading to deadly floods. Permafrost in mountainous regions and at high latitudes is warming, increasing the danger of landslides as the temperature of rivers and lakes rises. Their thermal stratification and water quality is changing. River currents affected by melting glaciers and ice are speeding up during the spring. Springtime is starting earlier. Plants are blooming earlier, changing the migrations of birds. Many plants and animals are expanding their habitats. That's all good stuff. Yeah. It's all Satan. Researchers found evidence of environmental changes due to the greenhouse effect caused by mankind in nearly 9 out of 10 cases surveyed. They consider it very unlikely the changes observed could be naturally occurring phenomena. Was that the mid-level of confidence or higher? News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And proof that not everything goes in a linear direction. Bowing to customer demands, Lloyds Bank of Britain is moving calls, a place where calls are taken back from service centers in India to local branches in the UK, because customers demanded it. Maybe because the Indians started charging too much. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USIN cables, 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Shortwave, think of it. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And you can check who's streaming when via www.publicradiofan.com. Available as a free download from www.audible.com/theshow. Available on the giant mighty 105 in Berlin on both Sirius and XM satellite radio. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like having a high level of confidence in anything. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. It's gonna be so fine when it's done. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world. I can vouch for this, just having walked around. It's still the home of the homeless.